I always love coming back after Thanksgiving break, seeing everything decorated. I love the lights and the Christmas decorations and all the festivity that surrounds us as we enter this season. But I want to remind us this morning as we begin Advent that Advent does not start with bright lights and festive decorations. Advent begins in the dark. I don't mean the cozy kind of dark with firelight and candles. I mean the deep kind of dark. The kind of dark that you feel behind your ribs. The kind of dark that settles in when you wake up at 3 in the morning and you're reminded of all the things you can't fix. The kind of darkness that creeps around the edges of a family conflict that's just gone on too long. The kind of darkness that hovers over a world that is somehow more connected than ever and yet maybe more divided than ever. Advent begins in the dark with longing and waiting. And this morning, I am carrying so many stories in my head and my heart of the longing that this church feels, the different situations you find yourselves in. Longing for comfort after the death of a loved one, whether it was sudden and unexpected or whether it was a long time coming, the grief is there. Longing for a glimmer of hope or the comfort of God after a devastating diagnosis. Longing for some sort of peace or healing in a relationship that's frayed. Longing for just a little bit of rest in a life that is way too busy. That's what Advent is about. It's about the longing that we feel. Even the longing that we feel, maybe not specifically, just by being alive and keeping our eyes open to the world around us. Nation distrustful of another nation. Conflicts all around. News that we read every day. And wondering if hope sounds like just something nice that might not show up this time. That's the Advent kind of longing that shows up in this season. It's the longing that shows up in the dark of real life, in the ache of waiting. Because waiting assumes that something better is coming. But when you are waiting in the dark, sometimes you're not sure the light will ever arrive. Step in with me to Genesis chapter 12. We don't walk into some grand moment. We walk into a quiet tent in a quiet place where Abram and Sarai are simply living out the days they have left. The future feels small for them, predictable, mostly finished. Now, the first 11 chapters of Genesis, they're cosmic in scope. Creation and chaos, a worldwide flood, a tower scraping the heavens. But then the camera zooms all the way down to one family, a husband, a wife, some livestock, a few servants. They had set out originally from a place called Ur, that's in modern Iraq, intending to go to Canaan, what we would call Israel and Palestine. But halfway there, they stop in a town called Haran, Turkey, Syria kind of area. It's a familiar, comfortable trading town. They just stopped there and settled. And it's right there in that stalled out place that God speaks. Genesis chapter 12, verse 1, the Lord speaks to Abram and says, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you." There's no map, no explanation, just a summons to a future that he can't see. And then God makes some promises that I'm sure were almost impossible to believe. He says to Abram, "I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." These words fall into the life of a couple who can't even imagine having a single child. And suddenly, they're told their story is going to be the beginning of hope for all the nations. I've titled this Advent series, "The Hope of Every Nation." But some of you might be like Abram and think, "Every nation? That's great. Could we start with my life?" So yes, in our wide year where we're focusing outside our walls, we're going to talk in some future sermons about the hope of every nation. But right now, we're just talking about the hope of one person. Maybe it's Abram, maybe it's you. I mean, I can imagine his reaction when he hears these promises. Can't you? Land? That land? Have you seen how many people are living there? I really think they're pretty hostile. I don't think that's going to work out. Many descendants? A great nation? We don't even have one child. And we can't. A blessing to all the peoples on earth. We are the most insignificant people in a no-name town. Many people would laugh at those promises. In fact, people do as the story progresses. But this is how God works. He begins with hope among people who feel empty. He starts worldwide blessing in a tent that doesn't even have a future of its own. That's Genesis 12. God breaks open Abraham's small world and invites him into a story bigger than he ever imagined. The hope of the world begins with a whisper in a quiet tent and two people who trust some promises. What do we do with stories like Abram's, with promises that we see there? On the surface, it might seem ancient and far away from our world, but the truth is that Abraham's world looks a lot like ours. He lives in a world shaped by scarcity, not enough security, not enough future, not enough reason to believe that anything would ever change. Abraham knows what it's like to be 70 and pacing the floor, wondering if anything in your life has ever mattered. He knows what it's like to look around, to scroll and see all the successes and contentment and blessings that others have that you feel have passed you by. He knows what it's like not to be able to see the hand in front of your face, because your once promising future just seems really grim. And yet God's answer to that is not fear or control or self-protection. His answer is a blessing and a subtle command. Wait. Because God says to Abraham, "I will bless you and you will be a blessing," but then he has to repeat that promise over and over and over again, in visions, in visits by angels, in the birth of an unlikely son, in stories that Abraham has to tell his son Isaac, and that Isaac tells Jacob, and that Jacob hears again in Haran, the very place his grandfather first heard those promises. He has to keep repeating these because waiting is hard. Because there might be a son eventually. Maybe there'll be a grandson. But land? Being a blessing to all? Those are long promises. Those are slow promises. The kind that take more than one lifetime to grow. They're the kind of promises that require waiting. Real waiting. And I don't know if you know this. Waiting is hard. In fact, that's one thing our kids will talk about this week in their Advent devotionals. One of the questions, what's the hardest part of waiting? Maybe the hardest part is not knowing how long it will last. Maybe it's the fear that nothing will change. Maybe it's just the silence. Maybe it's the sense that hope, real hope, might not show up this time. Abraham knew all of that. And yet he held on to a promise spoken into a quiet tent by a God who keeps his word. And there's the place that this ancient story meets ours. It's where Abraham's story brushes up against our own story in the places where we are waiting and longing and hoping that God has not forgotten us. It's where our story brushes up against Advent, because Advent always begins with waiting. Not dramatic waiting, always. Not heroic waiting. It's usually the small, daily kind of waiting. The kind that asks for trust when we don't feel ready to trust anything. Last week, Aubrey and I took Miles on a kind of a parent-kid trip that we do with each of our kids, and we spent some time in San Jacinto, which is, I love this, right? Texas history. Let's go. So, of course, Miles has to endure history nerd dad saying, I know you've heard about the Alamo, but let me tell you about the rest of the story. And so I've been reading in preparation for this trip so I could be extra annoying. So I've been reading this book called Texian Exodus by Stephen Hardin, a great Texas historian. And just the stories that he tells about the people after the defeat at the Alamo who were running eastward to safety, burning towns behind them. And I just got images of a young mother in a town like Gonzales grabbing up children in the middle of the night, being told to go in hopes that maybe, maybe there's some safety and security, maybe some success further down the journey, but we just don't know what lies ahead. In fact, he quotes Captain John Byrd, who tells the story of two widows who are at supper when word came that the Texian army was leaving. He said, having no means of conveyance, each woman tied up a bundle of dry goods. Then each with two children holding to her skirts and one carrying an infant in her arms, they departed. In fact, the appearance of these two women so moved the soldiers that they got rid of some vital supplies to make room for them and their children in an army wagon. If you stripped away the historical details, this moment could belong to any century and any person, any family who has stepped into the unknown because staying put is no longer an option. That's where Advent begins. In the places where we cannot see how things will turn out, and yet we wait. And if we go back to Genesis and we skip forward about a dozen chapters and 100 years, Abraham is not just old anymore. He is, as Scripture says, very old. He has a son at this point, Isaac. And in one of Abraham's last acts recorded in Scripture, he enlists the help of his household to go find a wife for his son. And right before he dies, just a few years ahead of that, Abraham is able to witness the marriage of his son Isaac to Rebekah. 100 years after that first promise of descendants. Now, when Abraham died, just to recap the promises, great nation, many descendants, it was about a generation and a half on its way. Many descendants hadn't even made it down to grandkids yet. The land, not even close. We have to fast forward to Moses and Joshua for that. A blessing to all nations. I don't know if you know the story of Abraham, but you could argue that some of his actions, lying about his wife, starting conflicts, some of his behavior was the opposite of being a blessing to other nations. But we know what Abraham didn't when he died. We know that all of those promises came true. We know that God's plan to undo the curse of Adam and Eve won out. And in this Advent season, we celebrate one of Abraham's many descendants, Jesus Christ, our reason for hope and our proof that God keeps his promises. This is where the first Advent candle begins. In quiet places where we dare to hope again. The candle, it's not loud. It's not flashy. It doesn't fix everything. But the candle tells the truth that God keeps his promises and that God still moves in the dark. So as we light this candle today in a moment, may it be a prayer that we offer to God. May it be a prayer for a heart that trusts God, even into a future that we cannot yet see.